You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. There is a lot going on right now. As some of you have heard, there's this thing they call it the coronavirus. And it is wreaking havoc on nations all over the world, allegedly. Even though somehow hospitals are emptying out, and by the way, death records are being manipulated by the system. Well, you know, I am just really over a lot of the nonsense that goes on in the world around me. That's why I'm on a journey to discover truth. But here's the thing. I'm not actually here to intro on my thoughts about why this whole thing is a bit of a created debacle. What I am here to say is that it has created the need for us to cancel our Bride Tribe Advance in the spring. I am very sorry that I'm making this announcement. I held off as long as I could before making a final decision on this, but not only me, the rest of our board and others have weighed in on this, and we are not going to be meeting in May due to the complexity of travel issues with those of you that are wanting to come, limitations on abilities for people to meet in large groups, and so forth. It's just not going to be feasible for us to do the event right now. And so for those of you that have signed up, you have already gotten an email from us. We are going to be refunding everybody their conference registration, and we are already offering early bird registration for the fall advance, because we will be gathering in the fall, and we have really enjoyed doing semi-annual advances, but with the circumstances as they are, and the legal measures that states are taking and so forth, it is just unavoidable. So just understand that if you have applied, you've already heard from us. If you didn't check your email, check it. But we are going to be issuing refunds to just about everybody unless we are instructed otherwise. And we really want to encourage you guys to join us in the fall. Now, I want to make a few other announcements before we get to the program today. Bride Ministries is constantly working towards creating solutions for survivors of satanic ritual abuse, government-sponsored mind control agendas, and we are here to raise an army of qualified ministers that are going to be released into this area. And so how are we doing that? With our DID Coach Mentorship Program. If you didn't know, we have an entire institute called the Bride Ministries Institute. You can access it from our website, bridemovement.com. Probably around 80 hours of teaching materials just there alone. But to add to that, we have a Bride Ministries, a DID Coach Mentorship Program, where I am discipling individuals directly. And it is a year-long program. I have 14 people in it right now. And I'll tell you what, folks, I cannot wait to introduce our platform to these graduates. We're 3 months in and they are already exceeding expectations. And so we are going to be doing this program again next year. What's the goal? The goal is to train and release people to engage in the highest levels of spiritual warfare, the deepest levels of inner healing, and to bring about restoration for the children of God that have not had the tools they deserve available to them in the body of Christ. We are solving problems, and we are doing it in a big, big way. And so I want to encourage those of you that have a heart prod from the Holy Spirit saying, this is your calling. I have a mandate for you in this area. I want to invite you to apply. You can go to bridemovement.com on our ministry page, and if you scroll down, you will see an area where it says, I want to be a coach with Bride Ministries, and there's an apply here button, and that is our application. And so what you do is you fill it out. You will have to submit some other materials as well via email, and all those instructions are on the application page. Understand that there is no cost to submit an application, but we will not consider any applicant for an interview unless the not only has the form been filled out, but all of the other materials have been submitted. Furthermore, understand that not everyone that submits everything and gets an interview will be accepted into the program. This is not for everybody. This is for people that are ready for it. And even as you go through the application, you will see that there are certain qualifications we are looking for in those that apply for reasons that are very important. You know, we are looking for people that are stable. We are not looking for people that are at the beginning of their own healing journey. This is not a place to take a healing journey. This is a place to become a helper for those that are taking healing journeys. We are looking for financial stability, spiritual stability. And so you will see a list of qualifying factors that we are looking for. Understand that we are not going to be making very many exceptions on those areas. And so please just understand that we are actually doing this for the sake of those applying for the program, because we do not want to set people up for failure. We want people set up for success. We want to graduate champions. And there is no cost to apply, but the program does have a cost, as it is a year-long in-depth training. And so we invite you to check it out. I also want to let you all know that we are very grateful for those of you that continue to support us financially. For those of you that are supporting us financially, what you have to look forward to in the next few months as we are able to put it together and roll it out, well, it might be a few more than a few months, but we are building something. And it is going to be a self-deliverance portal on our website, a super, super cool outreach of the ministry where people will be able to engage with videos of me, yours truly, praying all of our various deliverance prayers over people. And we're going to create a system for helping you to determine which deliverance prayers you need, thereby allowing people to, you know, at least some people skip booking a session or trying to get private time with me or one of our other coaches, and really, really making provision for people all over the world to get set free en masse on your own schedule. So I think that this is something really, really amazing. It's something that God has put on our heart, a mandate we've received. And when you are sowing into this platform, you are sowing into a group that is literally designing a system by which thousands and tens of thousands, hopefully hundreds of thousands, will be set free from the powers of darkness around the world. So be excited with us. You go to bridemovement.com. You can use our app. Be sure to check us out at our church every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time if you have not already begun doing that. Guys, there's a lot more I could say, but we have an amazing guest today for you and a very exciting program. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. Folks, welcome to another episode of Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. I'm very happy to be sitting down again with my friend, Jan. She has been on the podcast a number of times before. As a matter of fact, we have a whole series called Journeying with Jan. If you have not listened to that series, please do. She has an incredible story. The thing is, she's not done telling it. As a matter of fact, there's more left to be told than has been told by far. And, you know, Jan is one of my clients. She is a survivor of satanic ritual abuse, as well as government-sponsored mind control agendas. And as we have continued to do work together, more has continued to surface. And so we're just very excited for her bravery to be joining us to talk about some of these things. Jan, welcome back to Discovering Truth.
Hi, Dan. It's so good to be back, and I'm looking forward to this podcast and the things that I can share that I haven't been able to share for a long time. So thank you.
Well, thank you for being brave enough to talk to us. And, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to start off with a little bit of review just to kind of catch people up, refresh people. Obviously, we're going to have new listeners. They haven't heard you yet. So why don't you just give us a brief run through on some of the background that gets us to where we're going to be talking today?
Sure, Dan. Well, this is my fifth podcast, and I have four other podcasts that pretty much outline my history As I've been able to process through it over the last 35 years. And it's pretty much tells my history in the 3D world. And so this podcast, I feel like it's like a transition into the work that we've been doing, that is more in the spiritual realms and in the cosmic realms. And so, really, I started out at 35 years ago with a couple memories of sexual abuse, and I got into counseling at that time, but it was secular counseling. And so over the years, I've had quite a number of secular counselors, and then I became a Christian, and I got into counseling through the church and through Christian counselors. And the Lord just continued to move me forward and deeper into my systems of programming, and until I reached your doorstep, and then I progressed from there into more spiritual realms of modalities. And so it's been quite a journey. And one thing I found out is that Jesus doesn't always go in a straight, what to me seems like a straight path. Sometimes he winds around and backtracks and back and forth. And it's almost like I thought the other day about a weaving. I remember a poem someone wrote about that our life is a weaving. And I was thinking about that really this whole journey of the therapeutic journey has been like a weaving. And the Lord just keeps bringing strands from the past and then weaves it in, and then I move on to other things, and then he comes back and he picks up that strand again, and he keeps weaving it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until the picture starts coming into focus. In the beginning, it was everything seemed so chaotic, and I couldn't make sense of so much of my history. But as the Lord has kept weaving things together, the picture is really starting to emerge. And I'm finding out that what I knew in the beginning was like an iceberg. I only saw the very tip of the iceberg, and that was mostly things done in the 3D world. But my work with you has brought me into the realms of the spirit, where a lot of the programming was done, and a lot of my memories are held. And so that now I'm working on the bottom of that iceberg, and it's making a huge difference. And it's hard work, but it's amazing. It's amazing. And so the picture is really beginning to come together now in a much broader sense for me.
Amen. Yeah, you know, folks, this is the truth. Okay. The truth is that for years now, there has been a continued unraveling of the truth behind government-sponsored mind control projects. And a lot of that began to come to the surface with the acknowledgement of MKUltra, a CIA project that had a bunch of sub-projects. And it was exposed and acknowledged by the courts. It happened. And then it got, you know, obviously a lot of the stuff related to it is sealed off, but it cannot be obscured, right? It's official. It happened. But, you know, they say, well, once we closed it, we stopped. They clearly didn't stop. But what happens is, you know, we begin to understand, all right, so there are projects in mind control, how to manipulate people, get people to do what we want, so on and so forth. But is it all in the natural? Right? Is it just you're hurting people and putting chemicals in people's body and making them do things? And the answer is no, not even close. As a matter of fact, the CIA has long partnered with satanic cults in the execution of their strategies. Why? Because satanic ritual abuse predisposes young children, starting at babies and infants, to dissociation, because that's how they survive that world. And so they are prime candidates for the government projects later on. You know, and when it comes to the merger of the government-sponsored mind control world and the mind control that occurs in the cults, you do converge on the spirit world aspect of it, which becomes a major, major part of it. And as we go further and further into technology, what we see is that technology is becoming smaller and smaller and more quantum and synthetic. And all of that is getting interfaced with the programming. And so programming becomes, at the surface, a resolution of trauma physically, emotionally, psychologically, but bottoms out deep in the spirit and the quantum and subquantum realms. And if you cannot get into the spirit world, you're going to be looking at 10% of an iceberg with 90% sitting under the surface. And that's exactly what we run into over and over and over again. This is one of the reasons why I say, you know, secular counseling is literally about a 0% chance of ever helping survivors of satanic ritual abuse and government-sponsored mind control agendas fully. They might be able to give some medication and help, you know, get a person back on their feet and functional, but it's a management issue at that point. And what we are doing with Christ is resolving the entire matter from the top to the bottom. That said, Jam, we're going to get into some of the sticky details today. And I want you to break open a little bit about your first trip to Jupiter.
Okay. What you say is also true. And from the client perspective, I have to say that when I came into under your ministry and counseling, I really didn't have a box to put this kind of stuff in. So that's why I want to share my testimony of this journey with you, because I'm hoping it will help other survivors to know that you're not crazy when you start remembering this kind of stuff, because it's not talked about in the world. It's not talked about in the church. And as far as I know, this is about the only place it's talked about. So I'm just sharing it so that maybe it will help some others to be able to move along in their own journeys. So the first trip to Jupiter started out with I was listening to a testimony of a woman who was part of the Mother of Darkness. And I'd heard about Mothers of Darkness for years and years and years, but I had prayed about it. And I really felt like I was not a Mother of Darkness, even though I had probably a lot of the things that might have indicated that. But I really could not get a confirmation that that was part of my history. And yet, when I listened to this testimony, I really got triggered. And so when we met for our coaching session, I brought that up. I'm like, I don't know what happened, but I really got triggered. Something's going on. And so you started, you know, just asking, bringing Jesus in and asking questions about if I was ever exposed to Mothers of Darkness, you know, organization or meetings or whatever. And what came was that I had been to a convocation, an installation of a Mother of Darkness into her position. And so that happened under the Vatican. And so I had had some other memories involving the Vatican. So that wasn't such a big, you know, surprise at this point. But what was a surprise was that I was present when one of these Mothers of Darkness was being installed or crowned, as they might say. But I was not a Mother of Darkness. I was what is called a High Witch. And I had known that I was a High Witch for a long time, but I really had no idea what that meant. I just knew that I was. And so during this coaching session, it came out that that a High Witch is, I was sent to these particular special meetings in various places in the world, I think, castles and so forth, that were having these installations. And my job was to hover over the event and to do warfare in the spirit realm. Because when Mothers of Darkness are installed, there are many, many factions in on the dark side, and sometimes there are conflicts as to who is going to be installed and interference with that process. So I was trained up from a very young child to as a witch, because my mother was a witch. I came from a long line of witches, I believe now. And so I was trained up in for this particular position to do battle in the spirit realm. And basically it involved battling entities. But those entities are usually tethered to human beings. So sometimes, it was a battle to death sometimes, even as a child. So when this whole thing came up, I think you finally ask, well, is this high witch inside of me? And it turned out that she was not inside of me, which was interesting.
And it's like trying to find where's Waldo. You're like, all these people, it's like, where is it? It's like, it's not there.
Yeah, I think that might have been a new concept for me at that time. So the question came up, well, if she's not inside of you, then where is she? And the answer was Jupiter. So Jesus was right there, and his remark was, well, pack your bags.
Can I just say this? All of you religious people out there, listen to me. I'm sorry if I have to break the news to you because no one else did. Jesus is not boring. And he's not like really awkward, boring guy that just sits on murals. Like, some people think that Jesus is a mural without a personality that walks around. That's not who he is. He's actually really, really funny. And he has a lot of personality and character and jokes, okay? So I just had to say it, step on some toes. Jan, please continue.
You are so right. And I think some of it's going to show up in this story. So I find myself on Jupiter in a throne room. And this throne room is massive. And there are stairs, I would say like 100 stair steps up to this throne. And on the throne is this woman who is decked out in amazing robes of purple and gold. And she has this huge headdress on her head. So she's high, high above me. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. This is supposed to be a part of me. And she's sitting up on this throne. So you invited Jesus to come in and introduce himself to her. And he comes in on roller skates. Roller skates right up to the bottom step. And as soon as he arrives, she starts throwing lightning bolts. And I mean big lightning bolts. And so then he started throwing lightning bolts. And she would throw a lightning bolt and he would throw a lightning bolt. And this went on for back and forth, back and forth. So they are just throwing lightning bolts back and forth. In the meantime, I'm seeing that she's calling in recruits. And there's like armies headed our way. And so I asked you, Dan, I asked you if you could see what was happening. And you said, oh yeah, I can see some stuff. And I think you were seeing the recruits coming in from the outside of this wherever we were. Which was, I was just hoping you were taking care of that end of things, because I was watching this lightning bolt war go on. So finally, Jesus just walked, I don't know how he did this, but he just walked up those stairs right up to where she was. And he took her by the hand. And walked down the stairs with her. And when they got to the bottom floor level, she just bowed before him. It was like over, you know, no more lightning bolts, no more. And when she did that, I connected with her at an emotional level and could feel the repentance and all the history of the training and what that meant. And it was a powerful, powerful just moment of cleansing and healing and restoration for me as I connected with her.
So that was a lot of fun. You know, I always find it, I mean, I literally laugh at this point. It's like comical. It's like, oh, you're going to call in reinforcements? So, but Jesus is on a redemption agenda. Here's one of the things that I want to point out to those of you that are listening to this story, right? One, there isn't a single part of you that Jesus doesn't love, guys. Let me explain. Jesus was after this high witch and her heart, even though she's sitting on a throne on Jupiter throwing lightning bolts at him. Think about that for 1 minute. And then size that up against the revelation that you have of who Jesus is. Because it is a real paradigm shaker to realize that he is the embodiment of love, truly. Now, he's there on a redemptive agenda. He's after this part of Jan that he finds to be precious, lovely, and beautiful. And he has no issue traveling to Jupiter to get the job done. And this is the next part of the revelation, right? So, okay, it's like this is a revelation, just how much Jesus loves us is the next step. There are thrones on stars and planets, and planets are sometimes referred to as stars, where pieces of people's humanity are enthroned and having a jurisdiction in the kingdom of darkness. It's true. And believe me, guys, Jan and this queen is not the only one. And so we find ourselves going to, you know, we talk about this concept called regions of captivity, right? And some of these regions of captivity exist in heavenly places. So we might go to Saturn and find a prison with people's DNA and soul fragments tied up in it, or a laboratory. But sometimes these regions are not prisons, but actual enthronements of pieces of people's humanity that were trained to do a job in the kingdom of darkness from that place. And so when you get into the higher levels of witchcraft and what some of these high witches are really working with, it's cosmic power, because there are thrones that exist outside of Earth from which they are extending power. And so this is something to keep in mind. Please, Jan, continue.
Yeah. So I found out her name was Queen Isabella. And as soon as she had bowed before Jesus, he took her headgear off and her robe off and put on a white robe. And he had this really long bench, and he just walked her over and set her down on the bench. And he told me that he would be doing some work with her for a while. So I knew that that meant that I wouldn't see her in my system. I wouldn't really be communicating with her, that he would be ministering to her and bringing her on board, so to speak. So you ask a question about, I forgot. I had told you a story about back in the 90s, I had gone to a Benny Hinn conference.
Yes.
And I was in the choir, and I sat next to a woman who was not in the choir, and she was very kind of a strange woman from the beginning. She was sitting there reading her Bible. She never looked up. She never spoke. She never engaged. that as soon as the conference, as soon as Vinnie starts speaking, she started vocalizing things that were not right. She was kind of causing disruption. And so his ushers started coming up toward us. And I was really nervous about the whole thing because she was sitting right next to me and I thought they were going to think that it was me. And during this conference, Benny started, it was one of the very first times that he started having these massive people falling in the spirit. And I mean, amazing things were going on in the service. And while I was in the service, I saw myself hovering in the spirit over the auditorium. And I, at the time, I didn't understand it, but it was, you know, it was very supernatural atmosphere. And it was the first time I'd ever been in anything like that. And so I just sort of tucked it away in the back of my mind. And I never really knew what that was all about. But after the service was over, Benny invited people to stay and help put things away and so forth. And I felt like I was supposed to stay there. I felt like that the Lord really wanted me to stay and help with that service. And but I was with another friend, and we had parked far away and had taken a tram in, and I would have had to go on the tram by myself in the middle of the night. She didn't want to stay. And I was afraid to do that, so I didn't. But I felt like for all the years and years after that, I felt like that I had missed a calling, that I was supposed to stay and help after the service, and that somehow I would have connected with someone and I would have been part of that ministry, or I might have been invited to be part of that ministry. Somehow I felt like I missed the Lord, that there was a connection there that that I should have made and I did not. So I sort of regretted that over all the years. When I started coming into the knowledge of my past on this level, on this spiritual level, I had this knowing that I was operating in that conference as a high witch, that I was actually doing spiritual warfare, you know, in the top of that arena. And so that was just a really curious thing. Well, as I did this work on this particular session, it was revealed by the Lord, I believe, that actually I was sent into the Benny Hinn Conference as a high witch from the occult on an assignment. And that if I had stayed, maybe I would have made that connection. Maybe I would have been part of that ministry, but it would have been as an intruder or an infiltrator. And so that all wound up being part of what I got triggered, how I got triggered when it's hard to explain, but that was part of the triggering that went on when the whole high witch issue came up. And I guess I wanted to bring that up because the occult has agendas for the church, and they do send people into churches on assignments to bring disruption, to bring distraction, and literally to bring people down within the church, pastors and so forth. So I just wanted to really put that out there.
There it is, the expose. I mean, look, we've experienced plenty of that here at Bride Ministries. And a fact of the matter is, folks, what I've learned is that at least half of the people that are sent in to a ministry as a plant do not know it as a presenter. They don't know. They just think they showed up. And the massive witch is working behind the presenter. And there's usually a trade on offense, meaning that if the witch gets called out, the presenter is programmed to get offended and write mean emails and write blogs and other evil literature about their leaders. So, you know, the thing is, I'm not saying that that's what you would have done in this case, Jan, but the thing is, this is a real thing. And many churches around the country have survivors sitting in them that don't know they're survivors. You know, it's interesting. And I laugh about this all the time when I talk with my pastor friends. I said, the only difference between us and you is that we know who our survivors are. You guys, though. So the thing is, one of the prayers that I will say over just about every meeting that we have, especially when we have our conferences and events, it's a regulation on the atmosphere. It is martial law in the spirit world. It is, there will not be any ungodly and unauthorized astral traffic and trade. I use that piece of language all the time because I know that Jesus is reaching the hearts and the lives of survivors who are bringing in parts that are programmed to destroy the spiritual atmosphere and the work that Jesus is trying to do. And we're just going to police that with our heavenly resources and keep declaring the name of Jesus, you know, because survivors need Jesus just as much as everybody else. And I'm not afraid of witches and warlocks showing up at our meetings at all. So, you know, but thank you for bringing that up, Jen. It's such an important point. And going from that, I want to let you talk about how your paradigm has been expanding more recently.
Wow. Well, yeah, it expands in a whole lot of different ways. But one of the ways to finish up this little story with Queen Isabella, you had asked, well, was Queen Isabella the one that hovered in Benny Hinn's conference that day? And the answer was no. And so you asked, well, who was hovering? And it turned out to be the name of Ginger. Well, in the end, it turned out that Ginger was a concubine to Isabella, one of 21 concubines of Isabella. And so you prayed and asked the angels to just bring them all of them forward, including the Antichrist that was in charge of the whole gang of concubines. And Jesus gestured to just sit them on the bench. He had this long bench. Isabella was on one end. And so the concubines just all lined up on the bench. And as they came in, I saw they were connected to a computer, the Beast computer, which we worked on much later, which I won't talk about today, but they were tethered to that. And they looked like clones. And I had a knowing that they were clones. And so at the end of the session, Jesus just led out Isabella and all of the concubines. And as they're going out the door, I said, but Jesus, why are you taking, if they're clones, why are you taking them? And he just went, shh, don't tell them they're clones. Which is, it seems like he always ends up After I have to push through some really hard stuff, he just pours out the humor in a way that just brings it back to a place of joy. And he does that consistently over and over and over again. So the paradigm expansion that I wanted to talk about was that when my journey started back in the 80s, in the middle 80s, my journey started with memories of sexual abuse. And a number of years later, about 6 or 7 years later, I found out that I had this SRA, the ritual abuse background. And then years after that, I found out that I had the government mind controls issues. And so every step of the way, I had to expand my paradigm, because from a worldview, even in 85, sexual abuse was not even really that well known about. And so it's been a continual progression of a wider and wider, or broader and broader expansion of the paradigm of the world that we live in. So when I came to you, I had already been through so many years of secular counseling and then Christian counseling. But I even had to wade in deeper waters when I came here, because we started working on these spiritual realms. And when I came to you, I didn't know I was a seer, even though I was. I don't think I had that much experience consciously you know, knowing or seeing in the spirit realm. So some of the things that I've come to understand in our work is that information comes to me during sessions in a number of ways. And seeing is definitely a fun way in most cases, but I also have a knowing. So sometimes the information just comes from a realm of knowing the information. I think sometimes that's from parts inside. Sometimes it's from Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Sometimes it's from history, but knowing is a big part of the memories coming forth. Parts speaking. Sometimes when parts start to speak, they bring forth information that I don't know because their histories are different in a sense than my history. So a lot of times when they are speaking, I'm hearing it for the first time. Hearing Jesus, and definitely when we're in session together, Jesus is always there and he's always interacting. And sometimes you're asking him questions. Sometimes I'm asking him questions. Sometimes he's speaking through me or to me. Entities. Sometimes I hear entities. Mostly I see entities more than don't listen to them much. But I do once in a while I do hear them say things to me. A new, relatively new issue is other souls. So the next session, which was about a month after the Queen Isabella adventure, was one of these cases where there was a soul of another person inside of me. So that was a whole new paradigm for me.
Okay, so we're going to deep dive on this. This is a really, really fascinating subject. And folks, let me just tell you, you know, we started running into this years ago. And when I initially started running into this problem, I named it human persecutors because we would find soul fragments of other humans inside of survivors, typically soul fragments of abusers, programmers, and those that they had been twinned with, among other individuals. Some people who have worked in the occult as soul hunters have prisons of people's soul parts inside of themselves where their soul hunter parts have stored the fragments that they've been able to capture. And so, you know, but we find these soul parts inside of people, and then it was a process of figuring out how to get them out. And early on, I found that the soul parts could be more stubborn at times than the principalities. It was really strange. And that led to the creation of several prayers, Freedom from Human Persecutors. And then when that one stopped working, Freedom from Human Persecutors 2.0. And then when that one stopped working, the ultimate Freedom from Human Persecutors prayer for the toughest of the tough. And, you know, we've continued to find this consistently. And sometimes these soul parts that get lodged in other people can be from a very, very interesting background. We'll just say that. And this is certainly the case with this person that you met. So please, Jan, continue telling us the story. What happened here?
Okay. So I came into this session and I was having some issues with, I knew that I had programming during the military. I was in the Air Force, but I have never had any memories of occult or government programming or whatever during those years. And not only was I in the Air Force, but long before that, when I was probably in my late teens, I was being taken to a base in Omaha, Nebraska, a SAC base, military base. And I was, I know I was being programmed there. I haven't had the memories of that yet, but I do remember being taken to where there was a waiting room. And they had this TV set there, and there were always Hercules movies, the same Hercules movie on every time I went there. And my parts way back in the 90s had complained when I first got this part of the memory that the movie was the same every time. Every time we had to watch the same movie. And so supposedly this was a dentist that I was visiting. Now I have no memories even till today of what happened at the dentist office, but I do have memories of the waiting room and this Hercules movie that was going on. And I know that the Hercules movie was probably a way of part of the programming that was putting me in a mindset to be able to go in and see the quote unquote dentist. So that's when my military, some of my military memories that I was trying to retrieve. I also left there and went to Europe, and I was I lived in Spain for a while in a town where there was an American Navy base. Then I moved to Germany and there was an American Army base. Then I came back to and before that I had been in Anchorage, which there was an Air Force base there. Then I came back to the States and I joined the Air Force. So I had this long history of living in places where there were military bases, but I had no memories of programming or associations with the government-sponsored mind control, which would only make sense to me that it went on, but I had no memories of it. So I brought all this to you in this next session. And so you, a lot of times you'll just, in the beginning of the session, you'll just ask if there's anyone inside that would like to talk to you. And so when you ask that question this time, a whole bunch of my parts inside were pointing to this man. And so I heard the name Charlie Morgan. So I reported that back to you, that I'm hearing the name Charlie Morgan. So you invited Charlie to come forth, but he did not want to talk. He didn't want to be part of it. So it ended up, there ended up being a little bit of deliverance there. You invited Jesus to go, and if Charlie Morgan didn't want to come forth, then Jesus could go to him. So Jesus did. He went to Charlie. And as soon as they made contact, I was transported to an area that looked like a desert. It had a lot of rocks. And Jesus was with Charlie, and we were just walking across this desert. And so the next scene was I was on the rim of a crater, and there was a catwalk. And so I was just walking inside. It was like a cage, and it had like acrylic over it. And I was just walking inside of this cage. And there was a stairway that went down. And so I went down the stairway, and I ended up in a hallway. And the hallway was like a curved hallway. There were rooms on the left that looked like they might be offices or whatever. And on the right, there were doors every once in a while. And the doorways led out to another catwalk that was, now it was underground. So these led to a big hangar. And so when I would walk out on the catwalk, I could see down to the hangar floor. In the top of the hangar, there was this huge light, round light. And when I was on the top of this crater and looking down, I could see two doors that would open like they would fold against each other. Like, and when they would open, then planes or crafts could come in. So when I was inside of this hangar and looking up at this light, and I was thinking, well, how could that be? How could this huge light be in the middle of these doors? And then the Lord showed me that when the doors opened, the light just split in half. It was like half moons. And so the lights actually became the runway lights for these craft coming in. So this is such, when you're going through this process and these things are being revealed, you know, I'm trying to figure things out at the same time I'm watching everything unfold. And my mind is, it's just going in 20 directions, it seems like sometimes. So the Lord told me there were people inside this hangar, and I don't know if I was getting nervous or he just knew I would get nervous, but the Lord told me not to worry, that I was in a memory, that it was not, they were not real. I wasn't in real time, that the people I was seeing were just memories, and that not to worry, that it was no danger. So I knew that there was a storage facility under the hangar floor. There was a craft on the hangar floor, and it wasn't like a black triangle. It was some kind of, it looked more like a jet plane to me or something, but it was there. There were flags there that were designs I'd never seen before. And I asked the Lord if there was an American flag, and he said there had never been an American flag there, that these were flags of other countries, I presume. So I asked the Lord where this base was, and he said it was on Jupiter. And so I just had, a month before, I just had this session with you, with Isabella on Jupiter. So then I started trying to figure out, well, what's going on here? Where's Isabella? Of course, she wasn't there. So I'm reporting back all these things, basically just taking a tour of this underground base. And you asked where Charlie was, and he was in a classroom, just sitting in a classroom. Jesus was down the hall, just wandering around. So so you went in, and or we went in, and you started asking Charlie questions. So the first thing you asked was who he worked for. And he said, NASA. And so you asked Charlie if I went through NASA programming. And Charlie said, yes, which, you know, sometimes when that information comes, it's such a shock. Because, you know, until that moment, till that very moment, I did not know that I had been programmed at NASA.
Well, and you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, even before this, folks, I didn't know what Charlie was yet. And Jen kind of gave a preamble to this thing, saying that, you know, well, she met someone that wasn't part of her. But at the point we were at, I didn't know that. All I knew is everyone pointed at Charlie. Next thing, Jan's having this encounter on Jupiter again, and suddenly this guy's sitting in a classroom. And so my prerogative was to figure out, what is this guy? And so I started asking Jesus, you know, well, is this part of Jan? No. Oh, okay. Does he belong here? Well, not really. Aha. Would you like to take him with you, Jesus? Not yet. And so Charlie is actually at this point being cooperative with Jesus. And this is one of the things that I want to point out. This is not the first time we found this to be true. Sometimes when we find soul fragments of people in other people, it turns out that those soul fragments are actually very cooperative with Jesus. And that they'll even choose Jesus, and they'll go with Jesus. And that becomes a salvation to them. They never got the gospel of Jesus Christ in their lifetime. Later it turns out that Charlie Morgan is no longer physically alive. But they do accept Jesus in the system of someone else where they are, and they end up going with him. And so that's always a big victory and breakthrough. But in this case, Jesus was like, well, he has some information that is necessary to communicate. So we started to ask some questions, and then we jump into NASA. So please, Jan, continue.
Yeah. So Charlie turned out to be a soul part of a man that worked for NASA in the middle 60s or 50s, sorry, when I was taken to this program. He was a scientist. And I was linked to Queen Isabella through essence that came in before I was conceived. So they grabbed essence of my spirit and formed Isabella. So Isabella wasn't really a part of me in the way other parts are parts. So they created her, set her up on Jupiter, and because she was connected to me, she needed my DNA. And so this program that was running in the middle 50s was a program where they brought children in and taught them how to remote view and soul travel. And they were using us to spy out planets to see if there was a established presence on these planets. So we were doing these remote viewing assignments. And I had, at this time in the middle 50s, I'd already been in the program for many years. I was taken into this program, I believe, when I was probably four or five, somewhere along in there. So I had already gone through the trauma-based MK Ultra programming, and I think I was probably 8 or 9 when this happened, when I was taken to this program of remote viewing. So I already had all the basic programming in place. And so this guy, this scientist, was on a special assignment, a special program to teach us the remote viewing part of our jobs. And so during this time with him, they were working on a new program because of this connection that I had to Isabella. And it turned out in the end that over the years, I was taken to these military bases, the ones I mentioned earlier. And I would go to these bases, and they would have an apparatus that would operate as a jump gate. And I would, from these bases on Earth, I would, I guess, jump through the spirit realm to Isabella so that she could be powered up on my DNA. And that was a provision of, well, let me just say this. I, as a bloodline person, I had certain legal rights to a portion of the earth. And I believe all bloodline people have this. Now, I could be wrong there, but I think that might be true. And at least for me, I had this legal right to land on the earth. But she had, because of that, because of my blood, and I connected with her, she had legal rights to this land on Jupiter. And so that's why I was taken to these bases, and periodically we were plugged together so that she would be powered up on my DNA. So you started asking questions about Jupiter and the base on Jupiter. And so, and that's actually where I was in this memory, was this hangar that I was in was actually a base on Jupiter. So you ask Charlie Morgan if what was at the core of Jupiter, and he reported back that there was a liquid energy that was being mined, and I could see in the spirit, I could see the core that looked like a whole City or something. It was a refining plant, actually, where they were refining this energy, this source of energy. So you ask about portals, and I could see portals, but there were a lot of other things too. There were a lot of construction and so forth. And so, as the story went, Queen Isabella owned the land where this, there was a base on Jupiter, and it was a like a sack base here, that it was a defense base. So their defense forces were coming in and out of this base, and they needed the defense forces because the core of Jupiter contained this fuel that was very, very important and valuable. And so they are constantly having to defend against other races that are trying to come in and take over or capture these resources. So of course, all of this is just, crazy to me. Out of my well, my paradigm had to expand one more time.
Okay, so let me just say this. folks, I will sit there and just take notes, right? And one of the things that is very helpful is to make sure that Jesus is standing right there while a lot of this is going on, and it's the right Jesus, because sometimes we have to take care of the fake Jesus first, and then we know that we have the right Jesus, and then we can fact check some of this stuff. But when he's standing there nodding his head, I mean, it's like, okay, wow, new grid, new information. Interesting. It's interesting also to consider that we are talking about stuff that happened not in the 1990s, not in the 2000s, not 5 years ago. Folks, this was the 1950s that Jan was involved in these kinds of projects. Okay. Yeah. So they were sending her projections to a part of her occupying a throne on Jupiter, and interfacing with these different bases in the 1950s. So wrap your head around that. And then we, because I couldn't help myself, I had to ask Charlie Morgan a question. There's a whole lot of speculation about flat Earth, and I get it regularly. Well, Daniel, understand, the Earth is flat. That's what the Bible says. And I watched 25,000 hours of YouTube videos on flat Earth. Therefore, I know I'm right. And I continue to test the theory, oftentimes by doing work in the actual realm where this stuff is going to ground out or not. And so I couldn't help myself. I had to ask Charlie Morgan. I said, well, you obviously know something here. What do you think about flat Oh, Chad, why don't you just enlighten us here? What happened?
This is again where the Lord just let this whole session, which had been really pretty stressful for me, just land on a really funny note. And so when you ask, Charlie, is the earth flat? Charlie just started cracking up. It was so, I was just, it was so funny. He was just laughing. And he told me that, that at NASA, they have this whole story about the flat Earth. And so when new recruits come in, when new people come in, it's like a spoof, and they tell the story amongst the old guys, tell this story about the flat Earth, what while the new guys are there listening. And so it's just become a thing for them to talk about the flat Earth and to new people that come in. And he reminded me of when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed in Mississippi, and we had hurricanes down there. And I remember when I first went there that they told me that when a hurricane was predicted, that someone would be assigned to go up on the roof and watch for the hurricane. So it was the same kind of thing that the NASA guys do to the new recruits. with the flat earth. So you also ask him about if the earth was a torus or a sphere. And so I can't exactly remember how he worded it, but he said that it was a torus, but the science is based on a sphere, which sometimes causes mishaps. So I thought that was pretty funny too. But Charlie Morgan was, in the end, Charlie Morgan just went with Jesus. They just walked off together after the whole thing was over. And he was still kind of a mystery, but he shows up later on, a couple months later, in another session, which I don't have time to go into right now, but he ends up being a pretty interesting character. So Charlie Morgan, in the end, ended up being a soul part of this scientist that I was under in the middle 60s. And so he was just a soul part of that part. And in later, it turns out, I found out that the original man that I was programmed under had already died. So Charlie was a dead soul part of this man that I knew in the 50s. So, yeah, very interesting.
It is very interesting. And folks, I'm sorry to, you know, burst some bubbles here. But my honest opinion has been, if I can just say this without losing half my audience, I really believe that Flat Earth has been a bit of a psyop. Why? Because I do not think the powers of darkness want Christians even considering that part of our responsibility is bringing correction to the things that go beyond an Earth atmosphere. So they want us to believe that there is nothing beyond Earth atmosphere because the firmament just sits above our air that we breathe. And there are no satellites. There is nothing beyond there. And certainly any kind of entity would just come up from underground. So we would never be able to even entertain the idea that there is a soul fragment of someone like Jan sitting on a planet called Jupiter with a base on it. It just completely gets written out of the equation, cannot be part of what you would ever do with Jesus. And so what happens with something like this is we begin to embrace an idea that actually systematically dismantles the testimony of the witnesses to the powers of darkness and their actual plans and what they're doing. And furthermore, every time I've ever asked either an angel or Jesus or anything, like in session, just like this, Jan described, about the science behind the earth, I've always gotten back the same answer over and over and over. Earth's a torus. And the first time I got this piece of data came from a part of someone that was a quantum physicist for the Illuminati. So I have no actual YouTubes to explain the science behind that. It's just something that, you know, we're just continuing to test. And of course, if you want to believe in a flat earth, that is your choice, folks. Anyway, Jan, did you have anything you wanted to comment on before we get into another subject about essence?
No, it was just meeting Charlie was, he reminded me, there used to be an old show about this guy that was a private detective, and he was kind of frumpy looking. He had a tan coat and jacket and wore a fedora hat, and that's what Charlie looked like. He looked like somebody stepped right out of the 50s, and he was kind of a funny little character, but he went on his way with Jesus, and so I knew it was all good in the end.
So Queen Isabella, you mentioned, was created from essence. And Janet, this is a subject that we've been exploring. This is a term that's come up multiple times for me, essence. And I'm still trying to completely figure it out here. But you found essence related to other parts of you and your system as well. And I want to give you some time to kind of unpack that for us.
Yes, essence that has been it came up for us in our in my sessions quite some time ago, but Queen Isabella just added another piece to that puzzle that the Lord still seems to be putting together. And I had a knowing that she was like I said before, she was essence, so she didn't really have my DNA. She wasn't really a part inside of me. It's almost like she was an independent, separate entity, and yet she was connected to me in some way. So I've always or have pretty much always known about structures within myself that I call me, myself, and I. And these are their parts, and yet they're different than my other parts. I never get a visual on them. I never am able to see them like I do other parts in their physicality. But I'm aware of them when I'm speaking. And so, because they're pronouns, I use the pronouns me, myself, and I all the time. But sometimes these pronouns have an energy on them. And I've come to recognize over the years that when this energy is present, I believe these parts are under programming. So they're actually programming that are going on within my system. And so it's been an issue that I've prayed over many, 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 many times. We've had other sessions where they were involved or there, but the issues never seem to get never seem to get resolved with them. And we had had a session just before this where I had my some of my core parts finally came together in the core. So I was very excited about that because I felt for all these years that I never had a core to work from. It's like my core had been split when I was very, very, very young and was still scattered. And I felt like I needed to have my core come together to start building on. And so because of past work, I thought that this me, myself, and I was somehow connected to the core, and yet it didn't seem to be connected. So we started pursuing it in this session, and in the end, what came was that when my spirit came from God, it was in the form of an essence. And that essence, because of iniquity on my bloodline, there was a dark part of that essence which Satan recognizes and can I kept getting the word shave off. He can shave it off. So the essence is pure, it's from God, it's light. But this dark part, because of the iniquity from the past, gets shaved off. And then Satan can take that part and build upon it. And what came out of this session was that Satan had shaved off that part and created Isabella out of that. She was a dark, dark, dark witch. And she carried all the iniquity, I believe, of my family history. And so it came out that this me, myself, and I was a core that was built from this dark essence. And it was not a part of my core that came from conception. So it wasn't a part of my soul core, but rather was a matrix created out of essence and installed basically side by side with my true core. So it was a fault, in a sense, it was a false core. And then from that false core, me, myself, and I became an internal structure that they built programs upon. And so that became a matrix of programming that became a false identity, if you will. Does that make sense the way I explained it?
So folks, just be ready, because at the end of this podcast, there will be a quiz and you will be asked several questions on what Jen just explained to you to see if you have comprehended. I think you did a really good job of explaining the idea, Jen. I mean, it's really complicated and people probably have to rewind 5 or 7 times, maybe 12, to understand what you just said, because it was a mouthful. But you're doing a great job. So just please continue. And the beautiful thing about a podcast is that there is a rewind button. Praise God. So continue.
Okay. So here I have a matrix false core and a matrix false identity, which is the programming part of my system, and it's all controlled by AI on Mars. So
now, folks, I just want to just give you a little bit of a hint here, okay? Now, you're sitting there struggling. I know what you're doing. You're putting your head in your lap. You have your hand on your face. Your brain is aching, and you're thinking, gosh, how do I wrap my head around this? But I want you to just consider me for a minute here, okay? Poor Dan. Because when I get this kind of data, I'm on the line to figure out what to do with it. We need to get deliverance and inner healing. So as Jen is trying to unpack this to me, I'm like, so we're going to have to deal with a Mars base, artificial intelligence, and by the way, the false matrix? Well, it's going to be a lot of fun today. Anyway, window into my world. Go ahead, Jen.
Absolutely, Dan. And this is why it's taken me 35 years to get here. Because my secular counselors and all of my Christian counselors had no grid for Mars work. So we had done some work on Mars before, and during this session, it was revealed that this AI that operates this false matrix in me, and I believe probably in other survivors, perhaps as well, that it's controlled or maintained by a council. I got the name Good News Council on Mars, and the people on that council include the shadow military complex that's involved in our outer space travel, and the Kings of the Earth, which have a presence there, and also other alien entities from other planets and so forth. So this all has to do, I believe, with a New World Order agenda. Mm-hmm. And as a survivor, I was programmed with in what they call end time programming. So a lot of my programming had to do with the Book of Revelation and end times. So part of the struggle for me and the work has been to unravel and separate the end times as God laid it out in the scripture, and the end times that I was taught as a programmed mind control slave. Wow. And my programming basically was set up to be operational during the end times. And so in this session, some of the information that came forth was how part of that is being programmed for the future. And when the very first meeting I met Dan, he did a bunch of untethering from earth structures. And one of those was Big Ben in London. And when I saw Big Ben, I saw like a wire, like you'd take a wire out of a notebook, and I saw it around the Big Ben. And I had a knowing about Big Ben from years before that there was something buried under Big Ben that was important to the world. It was secret, it had been buried there, and it was used by the occult in some way to anchor, magically to anchor things in. And so some of the information that came forth, and I don't think it was complete, but some of it was that that the Holy Grail is actually buried under Big Ben. They anchor magically to it for their end times agenda. And Big Ben actually becomes a clock, if you will, that is set for times of the end times, and to set off programming within programmed slaves. So I don't fully understand the whole structure of that and how that was, all the details of that yet, but it's definitely significant, I think, for the end time agenda. And I guess the important part is to know, I think for survivors, that if we were programmed with end time scenarios, that is something I feel like I have to really unravel, because the programming can come in as things unfold in the earth. I don't want to be a part of the occult agenda. I don't want to be under programming when that happens. So for all these years, that was a lot of my motivation. I would say the majority of my motivation for staying in counseling, for working to get untethered, for working to get free from the entities, for working to get my memories back, from unraveling the programming, was so that I am not an instrument of Satan for the end times, that I am working on the right side of that whole event. And so I feel like...
I have to say this. Because this is so fascinating, folks. So you gotta check this out. I discovered with other clients, this is before I even met Jan, that Big Ben was an end times time clock somehow for the powers of darkness, and that survivors all over the world were connected to it in 2016. So we started going after it in 2016 in the spirit. And I do justice cases, meaning if I find one person tethered to an evil agenda that is an injustice, I leverage an in the spirit, what basically amounts to a class action lawsuit against the evil thing, right? And so we started doing some of this work back in 2016. So in 2017, Big Ben undergoes restoration agenda. Right now, if you go and look at Big Ben, it's covered in scaffolding. They plan to have it finished in 2021. But it's just so interesting, like the way some of these timelines entangle, and I don't know how to solve all of this, and I'm not saying, you know, the entire reason why Big Ben got a restoration agenda in 2017 is because what we're doing, but we certainly are tracking, right, since 2016, the idea, the concept that Big Ben is this end times time clock, and began to actively oppose it. Now, Jen adds this other piece of information that I had never heard before. I'm like, really? But hey, look, it's what's coming forward. And so we're just journeying this thing. I mean, it's wild. And folks, if you have not gotten my book, Advanced Prayers to Shake Heaven and Earth, this is how we are getting people untethered from all kinds of sacred structures around the world of this nature. Big Ben is on the list on the prayer freedom from Earth systems, along with the Eiffel Tower, along with the White House and the Kremlin and other buildings and stuff that are used for different purposes. Certainly the Great Pyramid of Giza. People are linked to these things all over the world in different ways and for different reasons through DNA and quantum entanglements. Wow, you know, here we are. Thank you, Jen, for bringing it up. Please continue.
This was one of those cases where the Lord had revealed the issue of the Holy Grail years ago. And then suddenly that he pulls that forward into this session. And Dan, it's one thing you always tell me is that to be okay with the process. Just be okay with the process. And I guess I would encourage other survivors that I've had to set my concept of reality aside in order to allow the information to come forth, because it's totally out of my box. It's so foreign and seems so crazy and so far out. But the more I allow myself to just let the information come and let Jesus do the work, the pieces start falling into place. Even the pieces that seem so crazy, they couldn't possibly fit into this puzzle. But he does the work and he's consistent. And a while back, I thought about how the way that the therapeutic process goes along is in so many ways seems like the Bible, in that, you know, the Bible has this woven process where the more you read, the more pieces fit together, and everything from Genesis to Revelation is woven into one massive picture of Jesus Christ and his redemption. But you don't get that from one chapter, and you don't get it in chapter one of Genesis. But by the time you get it all together, it all makes one picture and it all makes sense. And for me, the journey of healing with Jesus is the same way. A piece here, a piece there, a piece 10 years ago fits with a piece that I got today, will fit with another piece that I get a year from now, and the picture becomes more and more and more clear. But in the process, I have to set aside some of my preconceived notions about what life is and what it isn't, and go along with some of these, what seem like really crazy journeys. But it all works, and healing is coming, and I'm getting more and more freedom every day, and learning every day. And it's probably the most exciting thing I could have ever imagined in my whole life. And I love the process, even though it's hard, even though sometimes I struggle and have to push myself to stay with it and to stay in the fight. It's worth it. It's totally worth it. And Daniel, I thank you for just being in the process with me and helping navigate while I just follow Jesus and keep looking for the answers. Thank you.
Well, Jan, you're very welcome. And I am very proud of you. Folks, there's a lot more that you're going to find comes out of this woman that I am talking to. She is considering putting a book out, maybe two. If you think it would be interesting to read a chronicling of some of Jan's excursions in the spirit and through her healing journey, an expose, so to speak, leave a comment in the chat. Just encourage her. She is thinking about it, but, you know, it gets a little hectic. Other than that, you know, there is more to talk about. You will be hearing from Jan again on our podcast in the future. Believe it or not, our adventures with Charlie Morgan did not end on that day. And there is quite a bit more that we learned. We'll be able to talk about that at a smaller point in the future. But Jan, thank you for joining me today. This has just been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dan. It's been a blessing, and I hope it's a blessing to others.
I do too. And remember, if you need to listen to parts of this again, just press rewind because it is a podcast. Praise God. Folks, until next time, you've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. God bless and Godspeed. You've been listening to Discovering Truth with Dan Duvall. This podcast is a production of Bride Ministries International. Visit our website at brideministriesinternational.com to enjoy the Bride Ministries Church, the Bride Ministries Institute, free resources, and to support us financially.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.